everyone, and welcome back to the Donkey's Garage for episode 1 of season 3. It's been a long time since the last episode. I did mention that I did not intend to keep the regular basis as I had done before for previous seasons, and I think I will keep this decision, especially in the wake of the first two races of the 2024 season that have taken place so far, that being the Bahrain and the Saudi race. And much to, well, to my deception, to my sadness, they have been tremendously boring. They have been tremendously unappealing. And I think for that reason, foremost, there is really no reason to dedicate an episode to each race. I mean, it just kills the show, to be honest, but evidently there is this issue at the moment, which has already been something quite recurring in the past, with seasons of dominance by one team that then kills really the show, that leaves no room for interesting races, because ahead of the season you already know who's going to win. And just to give us some context as to what happened, at least since the beginning of the 2024 season, of course there's been the drama on the driver's side. Just a quick recap: Lewis Hamilton is set to join Ferrari in 2025, so that means next season. Carlos Sainz will leave Ferrari, and hasn't got a place yet confirmed. Charles Leclerc will stay in Ferrari for another 4 seasons, as he's confirmed a new contract and an extension. For the rest of the field, there is a question as who is going to fill the gap in Mercedes. Will it be Carlos Sainz? Will it be Alonso? Will it be, I don't know, Vettel? Who could be the driver that fills the gap? There's many questions, there are many rumors, and of course there is a lot of gossip going on. I think Mercedes should be betting on somebody who on something young and something, somebody who's going to bring future to the team. And the obvious answer perhaps would be Kimi Antonelli, who is a fabulous driver at the moment, racing F3. But he's just too young to join Formula One next year. So as it stands now, Kimi Antonelli couldn't really be a possibility. So they really need a driver that filled the gap for 2 years. So the question is, who can join for Mercedes for 2 seasons and then be willing to leave without feeling disappointed? I think the obvious reason would be Alonso in that sense, because, well, at the end of the day, he hasn't got that many seasons ahead of him because of his age. So maybe 2 seasons as a farewell in Mercedes would be a good option. On the other side, I personally think that would not be really a strategic move by Fernando Alonso, because he's in a team that is yes, developing in Aston Martin, but there is a lot of potential in that team, and they really are bringing, I think, a very good team together. And they just need time, but they've shown that they have the resources, they have the know-how, they have the possibility to really deliver and be fighting for podiums. Of course, with the background of Red Bull at the moment, where it's just absolute dominance, there is the obvious answer that place number one, so the first and second positions, are already filled. I mean, unless something happens, you know, if Max Verstappen is going to win, and there are strong and good chances that Perez should come second on a regular basis. We know that Perez has a tendency to sort of fall back in the seasons and as the pressure mounts, but still, I mean, is that Red Bull feels really solid. So the only question I think so far, if we really want to have a debate as to who, which place is at stake at the moment, I think that is obviously third place, first and second being already adjudicated. Now, on another note, more on the development side, Red Bull, they brought an amazing car, they brought a fantastic basis, a fantastic car that has, I think, has really slapped the face out of Toto, out of James Allison, out of the Mercedes team, because it has essentially brought a package that works where Mercedes didn't, and that is the 0.5 side pod concept, and they are set to bring a zero pod side pod concept from Suzuka onwards. So what this means, Red Bull took the approach of really shrinking the side pods and bringing these, instead of horizontal side pod, bring it vertical, and then reducing the side pod. But Mercedes weren't just able to do it because they had the issue with the wake at the back where the tires, where there was massive drag because of this design. As a result, they had to abandon it halfway through the season. They just accepted that they it wasn't going anywhere. But instead, Red Bull, with Adrian Newey heading the development side, were able to really provide a chassis that was implementing that design that actually works, and that, for that matter, to perfection. What I mean that it works is that it has, well, obliterated the whole field. I mean, it's just like there is a league of its own by Red Bull and the two cars in Red Bull, and then there is the rest of the field that are trying to play with toy cars at the back. Cars that have, of course, developed. I mean, the Ferrari we see that has taken a step forward. The Mercedes even has taken a step forward. All teams seem to have taken a step forward. Of course, they have taken a step forward into the direction of what the Red Bull looked like last year, which is very obvious and very reasonable. But Red Bull have said, you know, if you're going to copy our car from the 2023 season, how about we break the deck and we bring a completely new car? That means that all you've done through the season, winter season, is just, well, useless work, because we essentially just have taken not a step forward, but just we've started a new race. I mean, it's just a different issue altogether. And in that context, I mean, it feels that the season is almost over ahead of it. I mean, we dare to say that Max Verstappen, unless something happens dramatic, is set to win another championship. And I mean, he's shown in the first and the second race of the year that he continues to be a solid driver as he was last year, with definitely no cracks in his driving style, in his temperament, in nothing in him. I do want to address the issue that is shaking Red Bull at the moment, but I refuse to go into the gossip and to go into this nonsense debate about morality in terms of whatever happened that goes beyond the point of Formula One and it turns it into some sort of Love Island show. I mean, I will dwell more into the matter of what Formula One is turning into, but just to say, very shortly, Red Bull had an issue with an alleged misconduct by Christian Horner. As a result, there was a investigation that was carried out internally. The investigation concluded that there was no misconduct by Christian Horner. Following the conclusions of the internal review, the person who brought the case against Christian Horner has lodged an appeal. Formula One as such, with Domenicali at the head of it, and the FIA have accepted the decision. They were quite concerned that this review should be as objective as possible and should really, you know, delve into the matter professionally in order to to prevent a reputational damage to the logo, to the brand Formula One. Christian Horner, of course, denied the allegations, and then as a result of it, there were some rumors that there were tensions inside the team, splitting it into two sides. On the one side, led by Max Verstappen's father, Jos, siding with Helmut Marko, and on the other side, Christian Horner. Apparently, there are some tensions between these two sides, and at the moment, it would apparently be the case that they are the tensions are growing to the point that there might be a question mark as to the future of Max Verstappen within Red Bull, because he did confirm that if Helmut Marko were to leave the team, so would he. Also, there were the question of would these long term break the team apart with this polarized situation. Adrian Newey is, of course, another key player in this situation. Adrian Newey would allegedly have been sidelined because of budgetary issues, and then relegated to the private side of Red Bull, developing the hypercar section instead of focusing on the F1 side. I don't really know if these are true rumors, if it's true facts. I think this is beyond Formula One. And what I do really want to point out is that whereas there is, of course, a beneficial side to the Netflix saga, to the Netflix show, documentary, if you want to call it so, there is also a very, very negative side to it. That has materialized into Formula One becoming some sort of love island. And without being derogatory, I think this new approach to Formula One, where it seems that racing isn't the focus so much, but it's about the people, it's about the lifestyle, it's about the personal differences between drivers and team principals. This is all too much Hello Magazine style material. And at the end of the day, Formula One is certainly not about people, it's certainly not about lifestyle, it's certainly not about rich kids, it's certainly not about wearing the latest Richard Mille or Hublot watch for that matter. It's not about showing your latest Ferrari, your latest hypercar as a driver. No, please, no. And I insist on that. The Netflix saga has of course, hyped this side, because it is at the end of the day what attracts people. And just as a note, there is of course an obvious marketing tool on that, and that is, if you want to bring new people to the sports, you have to sort of hook them on something. And your fan base is usually stays quite homogeneously over time, because the people who watch Formula One, natural watch MotoGP, are people who are intrinsically interested by bikes, by racing, by cars, and so on. So if you want to go and search for new markets, for new people to watch your show, you ultimately have to provide a new hook, and that new hook has been to go and show people that Formula One is not about racing, it's not about dirty people people with dirty hands, people with living in a noisy environment. It's not about just petrol and oil. It's not about an unsophisticated lifestyle, but quite the contrary. It's about living the luxurious lifestyle, something that is sort of refined, something that is exclusive, right? And at the end of the day, all these kind of has been put into a pot, and they have stirred it, and at the end of the day, they have come up with this Netflix show that has been showing this luxurious lifestyle by drivers, by team principals, flying private jets, driving hypercars, and and so on. I mean, they wear the best watches, they wear the ultimate clothing, they have the ultimate holidays, they have the ultimate everything. And all these is just mutatis mutandis, the Kim Kardashian show, or the so many other shows. I mean, they show a lifestyle that is beyond the reach of the average person, and the average person somehow watch the show as to what they could be, right? It is this temptation of what the life of a rich person looks like and what you could have. And even if to me sounds quite stupid, I mean, why would you want to look and to watch a show that is showing essentially what you can't have? I mean, they are essentially showing you, look, this is what rich people live like. And now a reality check, look at your life. But I mean, apparently this is appealing, right? Showing you that people can afford seven-star hotels, living on $100 million basis salary, stuff like that. That is obviously beyond the reach of most the commoners, of the most people. I mean, that is just, I think, insulting. But fair enough, people that are attracted to that, fair enough, people enjoy it. And then people that are actually following Formula One at the moment, I think a large majority are now following this lifestyle, not so much the sports. The sport is just the sort of chain that surrounds, that keeps the machinery together, but the core of the show is showing lifestyle. With that said, I mean, it's just a bit of a treason to the sport, because we need it, of course, to increase revenues in Formula One, because there was a deficit lately, there were budgetary issues, and so on. And so the Netflix show has sort of provided a life jacket to the sport by providing a massive influx at the moment of cash. It's a new fan base. People are more interested than ever in the sport, and so on. So that is lovely. But have we betrayed the very essence of Formula One? That is the question. Have we now turned it into a meaningless sport with just the gossip, with just the hello headlines really being the what matters, what is at stake? I'm afraid so. I think MotoGP in comparison has stayed much more true, but also the fact is that MotoGP doesn't have a Netflix show, so people that are a fan to are fans of MotoGP, I think, are at the end of the day still those hardcore bikers, those who love their bikes, who kind of live on this lifestyle. And MotoGP has always had a tremendous fan base, and you can see that when the races anywhere around the world, that there are just masses of riders that go to and sort of get together and parade. And I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, which Formula One didn't really have over the last, I think, 20 years. So it's something different. It's also a different sort of personality, perhaps, that follow one and another race. But I insist, is something that Formula One has to really care about, not to pervert the nature of Formula One and to turn it into these gossip Hello Magazine show where we just interested about whether Lando Norris is sleeping with this one, whether Carlos Sainz sleeping with that other one, whether George Russell's girlfriend is doing X or Y on Instagram, and so on. I mean, the last season of the Drive to Survive season, I wonder whether racing really matters. I mean, it's just about gossip. It's just about the girlfriends doing their little show. I mean, come on, please. Be serious, keep it to racing, leave all the drama, all the gossip behind. And I mean, I'm not interested to knowing whether these one or the other one thinks or does what they do in their private time. I mean, their private time is absolutely their private time. It's of no interest to me, and I don't think it should be of interest to or to be even my concern at all. With that said, a quick recap on the racing, which is what matters at the end of the day. Bahrain, we were coming from the development early season. As I said, Red Bull had already shown a car that was very solid. For the rest of the field, I think there were a question mark for certain teams. Ferrari did look more solid than last season, especially they finished second on the constructors, but they did look like they were a bit lost at points. These new SF looks fairly competitive, which I think is a good starting point, but again, I think it's just uninteresting at the end of the day, because it's not a car that is going to win races, at least on a regular basis. Then Mercedes, they brought a car that looks as a step forward in the right direction, but it's just not good enough. It might be a top 10 car, but definitely not a top 3 car, a top 4 car. Aston Martin, I think is a bit of a half-hearted car. It is a very, very conservative car. It follows what it was last year. They did say that almost 90% of the car was new, but at the end of the day, it just feels like a very conservative development of what we had last year as a basis, and thus it just continues to be where it ended, and that is the top 10. Probably a P5, a P6 being a score that he could get on a regular basis, but at the end of the day, it doesn't look like material to fight for podiums regularly. McLaren perhaps is a bit of a disappointment in this early start of the season, as it finished really, really well. They were on a hype over the last. Since Silverstone, right, they had really smashed the grid. They had shown that they could bring a crazy car in the last moment. And then early season, you wonder where is that car? It has sort of just faded a bit, which I don't think we should read too much into these either, because we do know that McLaren is a team that starts usually quite mildly and then sort of wakes up mid through the season. So I am quite confident that they will suddenly wake up. They have already announced that they're planning to bring a new parts of the car, a new sort of spec B that will really put the car back where it belongs. Then we have to talk about the notorious Red Bull 2.0, that being the Visa Cash app, Red Bull's racing team, or bloody, oh, God knows how it's actually called. This is the team that we usually, back in the days, called AlphaTauri, or if you are even older, you would call Toro Rosso. For the 2024 season, it looks like a Toro Rosso from back 2015. They've adopted this shiny blue again. Looks very nice to me, with new sponsors, namely Tudor, with Hugo Boss being a sponsor. They brought some new sponsors, namely, of course, Visa. For the car itself, it looks just like a Red Bull 2.0 from 2023 season, so it should be quite a competitive car, although in the fast stint of the season it just looked like a top 12 car perhaps at best. They kept the drivers from last season, with Ricciardo being sort of the leading driver, if you want, and Tsunoda. I think keeping Ricciardo is a big mistake. A massive no for me, because you wonder whether this man is a driver or he's too busy playing nice guy. On the Netflix show, I mean, I'm not really sure what he's up to. Is the guy that makes you laugh? Yes, but he just makes a fool of himself at times. And I mean, I'm not really sure if his goals, long-term goals, are really realistic. I mean, he hopes to return to Red Bull, to side with Max Verstappen. I mean, it was already been there. He was chased out of that team by Max Verstappen, absolutely destroying him in the early part of the season. I understand that Christian Horner is really key on keeping him around, especially in the wake of these tensions around the team. Ricciardo has always been his go-to guy. He trusts him, and I guess he might think that if the moment comes where he needs an ally in the team, Ricciardo might be that guy. But, I mean, Ricciardo is not shown any performance so far. He hasn't shown an ability to develop the car or more than Tsunoda or any other driver could. And I would really bet on drivers who have the potential. And I mean, unfortunately so, the reserve list of drivers is filled with people that are absolutely very competitive, that are absolute beasts of drivers. And on that note, I really want to talk about what we saw by Ollie Bearman, the Ferrari reserve driver that took the wheel in Saudi, replacing Carlos Sainz as he was suffering from appendicitis. And this young lad, I mean, what, 18 years old, showed that these F2 drivers, they are a heck of drivers. I mean, they are well prepared. They are absolutely competitive. They are mature. They are strong. And yes, of course, an F1 fan with experience will tell me perhaps, Formula One is not about delivering one race; it's about delivering over and over and over and over again. And yes, I do agree on that. And most certainly, delivering one race is quite quite a result in itself, but doesn't prove that you have the strength, that you have the core to deliver on a regular basis. But I do have to insist that being sort of parachute into Formula One on a Friday and be told Saturday you're going to race in Formula One on a track like Saudi, which is just insanely difficult. I mean, you're doing 340, you are doing 330 on a regular basis, with walls as close as they could ever be. It's like a Monaco on steroids. And I mean, yeah, and he did it. He bloody did it. He bloody did it with a fantastic result. The team, I think they provided him a good chassis, a good base of the car that is drivable, unlike other years where the car is just insanely hard to drive. But hey, you still have to do it. And I recall, as a comparison, Nyck de Vries, of course, joined the Monza weekend last year, and, well, the year before that, sorry. And he was a revelation, right? Because he was parachuted again, and he did an amazing weekend, and everyone was stunned. And that really, really gave him the ticket to Formula One for the season after, because everyone was so bloody impressed by what he could do. I mean, he finished in top 10, I think P7 or P8. With an AlphaTauri, he did a fantastic result. And don't get me wrong, I still believe Nyck de Vries is one of the best drivers recent times have had. I mean, he's a driver that has won Formula E, he's a driver that has won absolutely everything up to Formula One, and he just wasn't able to put it together in Formula One. And I have to say that also, there are stunning drivers that in Formula One just don't work, like Hartley in Red Bull, and or even Gasly in Red Bull, or Albon in Red Bull. I mean, or so many others that have been in Formula One, that have failed in Formula One, but they were absolutely crazy drivers anywhere else. And Formula One is just like that. And when you go to Formula One as a driver, you can be as good as anyone else in the field, but you have to have the environment, you have to have everything that kind of clicks together, and sometimes you just don't have it, and too bad. I mean, you can't cry over that. Unfortunately, the race itself is the nature of Formula One is a very abrasive environment, and if you don't put it together and if you don't provide results, you will be outed, and that is a fact. And I think it eradicates on the nature of the law of the jungle, right? The fittest survive. That is the winning, and it proves that the evolutionary theory is right, because only the fittest, only those who are adapted to the environment are set to survive, and you can't really change that by just a magic rule or artificially altering the environment. And if you alter the environment, you're certainly set for failure. And that is Formula One. And all these policies that we have now, that we're trying to sort of bound the rules, to alter the rules, to make it more competitive, to make it more even, to make it more racing, and so on. I think all these is just very unfortunate direction, because if Formula One has proven something, is that extreme Darwinian theory works. I mean, that's just how it is. And it is up to the others to really catch up. And so it applies to the drivers. If you're not up to the standards, if you don't, I don't know, if you're not physically fit, if you're not mentally fit, if you're not in symphony with your team, if you can't work with your engineers, if they don't trust you, or the other way around, if you don't trust them, you're just not going to work. And unfortunately, you're just going to have to be dropped from Formula One. And the prime example of that is Daniel Ricciardo. Worked to perfection in Red Bull. He was a solid driver. He won races. He won Monaco. He did his job top notch. And then leaves for Renault. He had a car he didn't trust. He had a team he didn't trust fully. Just doesn't work. And then the story from there on, we know it. And the same happened in McLaren to a very unfortunate ending, where he was literally just outed from the team because of poor results. And all this is just the theory of the fittest in motion. I mean, it's just how it is. And why would you want to alter that? Because if you have Formula One, the very nature of Formula One is just it is the window where the best drivers out of the best drivers in the world sort of come together and they fight for victory. The same applies to IndyCar, the same applies to Le Mans. I mean, to win Le Mans, you have to be the ultimate driver. The ultimate driver in rainy conditions, in fogging conditions, in night conditions. In early morning conditions, you have to be the fittest in all circumstances, and that is the ultimate goal of racing. And that is the same theory that applies behind the free market conditions, that applies to your working environment. If you want to survive, you have to provide the best of what you've got. So, Ollie Bearman, very good driver, amazing driver. He's done an amazing performance. And I do believe he should be given a place in Formula One. I do believe that, and I do believe that for so many other drivers. And namely, I have to specifically point out that Schwartzman, who is a Ferrari development driver, should have been given a place in Formula One. He should have been given a shot in Formula One. He's definitely a very solid driver. I don't understand why he was not given a chance. I understand that he lacked the financial side, because Formula One is much about financials, it's much about money, it's about how many sponsors you bring, blah, blah, blah. And it explains why so many drivers are in Formula One also, because now these days you have, well, unfortunately, drivers that buy their seat in Formula One, they last so long is because they are really financing the teams, and once the cash runs out, they're onto the next one. We saw that with Latifi, we saw that with Mazepin, with Stroll, with a couple of other drivers that I'm sure they are competitive drivers, they're very competitive, but I'm not sure they do belong to Formula One. So Saudi, very good performance by Oli Biermann. For the rest, Max Verstappen won both races. What a surprise. Perez, also good performance. For the rest of the field, I mean, Norris did a mild result in both events. Not much to say. Piastri also, but I mean, nothing out of the ordinary, to be honest. With Alonso not being competitive in Bahrain, absolutely not. And being a bit more competitive in Saudi, finishing top P6, but it just felt that was a good result, but you shouldn't be expecting much more than that. With what? Hamilton, I mean, Hamilton, I have my questions about his current state of mind. He just doesn't seem to be very motivated. Both races, he was just back there, sort of saying, well, look, the car is not what I want. It's not working. It's not delivering a good result. And anyway, at the end of the day, I'm out of here. So I'm not giving 100%. I mean, he doesn't show the fighting spirit, this sort of crazy aggressiveness he used to have back in the days. George Russell, really, really good in comparison. I mean, being aggressive, being persistent. He's shown, I think, being the leader of the team at the moment. But also, I guess, really, that is the issue of announcing a change of drivers so early in the season, is that then you do have a sort of breakdown in the relationship within the team. Because at the moment, I understand that the Mercedes is not going to invest much more in Lewis Hamilton, because at the end of the day, he's leaving the team next year, and to keep investing in him would be perhaps seen as a waste of resources. George Russell, on the other hand, is the future of the team. So at the end of the day, you want to do the opposite. I mean, whoever is going to come next year and fill Lewis Hamilton gap, he will have to adapt, to take some time to really find him his place in the team. And so George Russell is going to be the leader of the team for some time, and that is. What matters? I mean, it's just allocation of resources. What else? You have the same problem in Ferrari with Carlos Sainz being dropped. He was, I think, a gentleman. As always, he acted maturely. He showed that he's a top-notch driver. And he said, no worries, I'm being dropped, but I'm going to deliver. And sorry, but his performance in Bahrain was just to perfection. He was just a 10 out of 10. He fought like crazy. He fought like you've never seen it before. You've seen a Carlos Sainz relaxed, a Carlos Sainz being aggressive, a Carlos Sainz fighting like he cares more than ever before. And that is because the weight that he was carrying all along, which was the weight of carrying Leclerc, of carrying a team that worked against him, has dissipated. Now he knows that all he's got to do is to deliver and fight for his future. All he's got to do is really show that he deserves more than ever a place in Formula One. And I do believe he does deserve a place in Formula One against all odds. I mean, he's really the driver that has led forward that bloody team, Ferrari, a massive bunch of wankers, who've done nothing but to ruin his career. They've had nothing. They've done nothing but to really sabotage his career. They've done nothing but to advance Charles Leclerc to the detriment of the other driver. Which, fair enough, if you want to go ahead and do that, but do it at least openly. But this bloody Ferrari team, they've always been, I mean, they've been, well, secretive. They've been dirty in the way they've played the cards, and yeah, no surprise, they've done it, and they have absolutely no remorse, of course. And still, they have the indecency to show in Netflix a face which is, I mean, I think insulting and derogatory towards Carlos Sainz, which is to say that they provided both cars, both drivers, the same resources. And I'm sorry, that is just an outright lie. Fred Vasseur, yeah, he wants to do the acting and show that he cares about his driver, Carlos Sainz, and that everything was fair and square. Leclerc, I mean, that is just outright insult. I mean, that is just a slap on the face. He has the indecency to say that he supported Carlos Sainz in winning in Singapore. No, please don't make us look like we are fools. Don't insult us so badly. You've done nothing but to sabotage Carlos Sainz. You've done nothing but to cry. You've done nothing but to manipulate the radio to the team against your team driver. Which, fair enough, Formula One is a tough place to be. But don't have the indecency to go on camera and be like, oh, I am the best team driver the Formula One has ever known, and I've done nothing but to play team play. Absolutely not. You've done quite the contrary. You've done nothing but to play selfish and to go against the interest of the team, where obviously you were not delivering. I mean, I'm sorry, but the team was being dragged against all odds by Carlos Sainz. He was dragging the team forward. He was actually pulling that team to, like, developing it, pulling it forward to good results, bringing solid results over and over again, where you were too busy crashing the car and just failing altogether. I did really like Leclerc at the beginning of his F1 career, yes, but he's become an annoying, a selfish, an unbearable driver. And that's what I have to say about him. Whether you like it or not, that is not my problem. But I'm sorry, that Ferrari team is a disgrace to Formula One. They've done it before, and unfortunately, I mean, what can you expect of Ferrari? They are just a bunch of clowns. It seems, yeah, whatever. But I mean, it's just what it is. I mean, what can I say? Leclerc brought Frederic Vasseur for a very good reason, and that is because Frederic Vasseur, at the end of the day, was the man that brought him to Formula One in the first place. He was the man that he trusted, and he placed him there knowingly that he would advance only in preference of his of any other driver. That is a fact, and you cannot dispute that. Carlos Sainz, I really do hope that he stays in Formula One and he shows everyone who criticize him, and I did criticize him time over time for not delivering, for not being aggressive. But what I want to see in the future from him is a driver like he was in Bahrain, like he's been in Bahrain, not in Saudi because he was sick. But in Bahrain, he showed he was solid, that he was aggressive, and he had the stakes to fight Leclerc head to head and win over him and just beat the leading driver. And that's what we have to keep in mind. In Bahrain, I have to say, Leclerc was too busy complaining about his front tires, the locking apparently, blah, blah, blah. And he was over the radio complaining, no, please, just, tell Carlos to stay behind me. For God's sake, Carlos is just so much faster. He's got a better strategy than you are. Well, you're too busy just crying over spilled milk. Just let him through and let Ferrari take some very valuable points while you're too busy crying. But no, of course he had to be ridiculous and try to slow down his teammate while it was so obvious that he didn't have the competitiveness, at least that weekend. I mean, that's all I have to say. I'm not going to repeat myself to make this boring, but yeah, that is what I have to say. So, what else there to say? Development, as always, is going to be a critical signing of the season. Teams will have to keep developing the car, bringing updates. Aston Martin has a huge challenge ahead of them. Last year they failed strepitously on that side. They just failed. No discussion about that. So this year they said that they brought a platform that is much more suitable to development. So their idea was to bring a more sort of neutral base, neutral chassis, neutral car that they could then develop accordingly and to a much greater extent. I hope that is true, and we will see a positive development in the coming races. That is the same for McLaren, that is the same for Mercedes. They have a challenge ahead of them, and so Ferrari, of course, because we do know, unfortunately, historically, Ferrari usually starts the season quite strongly, and then as the season sort of unfolds, they sort of fade down, and especially towards the second half of the season, they sort of lose direction, and they just aren't able to develop the car. That was the case in 2019 or 2018, and that's how they lost the championships. I also have to say that although I'm not a big fan of Frédéric Vasseur, I think he's a very solid team principal in that he's brought the sort of cocoon feeling to the team. He's put people on the right environment, and within a season he's been able to really turn the team around. Although he's done it very, very mildly and so almost has gone unnoticed, the team has kind of flipped. I mean, there is a different flip to the side to it. So great for them. I mean, it's just what they needed, especially they really required these fresh air. I think with the Binotto's last season, they sort of lost the trust within the team, and then they really needed. I also insist Carlos Sainz has a lot to do with that development, with that spirit within the team. He's a solid driver that is very, very involved in the development. He's shown that he really looked after the team, after the engineers, after the people working in the team, the engineers. And they are the mechanics. He did really show to be a team builder, as Schumacher was back in the days. On that note, I think I've done quite a solid episode covering, I think, what there had to be said. As I said at the beginning, there wasn't really much to say specifically about each race. So it was better to sort of compound the information about the pre-season, about the two races, and make something that sort of wraps everything together more than just giving a few notes on each race, which at the end of the day, I have to insist, they were really boring. And I am very disappointed on that side, because I mean, I myself have to say that in spite of it all, after the first 10 races, the 10 laps, I was already yawning and I was already thinking about anything but the race. I was doing it, I was playing, fiddling with my phone, I was doing that and so, and I mean, Yeah, I mean, all the people I know that have told me, look, after 10 laps, I just switched the TV off because I wasn't interested anymore. I mean, I could just as well watch the recap on YouTube, and I was better off. I mean, I would have only wasted seven minutes of my life as opposed to 2 hours, and I understand that. I do watch the races fully, but I do have to confess that I don't watch them actively when they're boring. I mean, I've got them on the background and I'm, of course, doing something else. And that is something that impacts very negatively on Formula One. I do hope that these improves, and there is only one hope, and that is quite unfortunate, and it goes against all reason. And that is that the drama occurring at the moment within Red Bull will tear the team apart. They won't be able to develop the car. They will lose their cap. And as that unfolds, boom, the team is no longer competitive, and other teams, other drivers are able to reach them and to fight for the top three places on the grid for podiums. On that note, thank you very much for listening, and I wish you a very pleasant day. Thank you very much.